Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Valley Nordic, a podcast on business and culture and tech, how it relates to the Nordic countries and Silicon Valley. And I'm Chander, based in Palo Alto.
Hi, everyone. This is Arne from Oslo.
So I did this intro today because sometimes we get new people. Generally, we have a steady audience of people who listen to us regularly. But sometimes we get new listeners and they don't know, you know, what we are about. So today's topic is IPOs in 2020. What has happened so far and what we are looking forward to happening in the rest of 2020. And today marks the beginning of second half of 2020. And on that note, we would like to announce that we are taking a summer break, mainly because Arne lives in Europe and Europeans don't really work in summer. So we'll be back on August 20th. So it's almost a 6 weeks break.
Absolutely. We Europeans do whatever we can to feed the stereotype that Europeans are lazy so that American audience is happy.
It must be easier for the Europeans to stay in lockdown because apparently Europeans don't like going to work, which I disagree with. It's a stereotype. I've lived in Europe, so I know it's not true. But some people think that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also I received feedback from a new listener that we should have the podcast more structured and summarize things in the end so that people who can't listen to the whole thing, which is usually an hour or less, they can take logical pauses and continue later on. So we'll try to do that when we come back on August 20th. So you want to introduce the topic in more detail today, Arne? This is your thing. You're the money guy. So.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do that. So I guess in 2019, we did a few episodes where we looked at S1s for companies IPOing. And looking at the details of those IPOs. And it was a very steady stream of exciting IPOs last year and almost IPOs. So that was kind of a fun section to do last year. And then we have done nothing on IPOs this year. And part of that reason is, of course, that it's been a slower going with the IPOs this year. But we'll still look at tech IPOs for 2020. And I guess we'll just start with a little bit of sort of high level what's going on. And then we'll talk about a few of the IPOs year to date and one that we think is coming up very soon. And then also sort of look ahead a little bit what we think will come in second half of the year or might come. Yeah. So I guess that's the structure. High level, year to date, very soon, and then possible second half year.
Yeah.
Is that sensible structure?
Yeah, sounds good. And for our listeners who are not familiar with the IPO world, it stands for initial public offering. This is when startups or private companies go public, meaning anybody like you and I, normal, well, I shouldn't say normal, but retail investors can buy shares on a stock exchange. And there are two reasons companies do that. One is to, or two main reasons, to raise new funds. And then second is so that the early investors can get an exit so they can sell their shares and get the returns back.
Yeah. It's the way the world used to work that, you know, if you're a mature company, then you're a publicly traded company. That's how the world used to be. Mm-hmm. And it, to some extent, still is. But trajectory has been that companies stay private for longer and some very mature companies have remained private.
Yeah. Yeah. One more thing I want to mention about IPOs is generally when the companies prepare for IPOs, it's a long process. You have to hire investment bankers, they do market making, and you have to, the CEO and, you know, CFO generally travel around the country on what's called roadshow to meet with the bigger investors. So to tell the story, strategy, etc. I think we should rename that to Zoom show instead of roadshow, since a lot of it is happening online now for the companies that went IPO in the last 3 months.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, let's get started. What do you want to cover first?
Yeah, so if we talk a little bit about sort of the dynamics of the market first. So I guess what happened in 2019 was that there was sort of a bull rush of companies going to the market and it was good for a long time. And then WeWork hit and things got bad. And we talked a lot about the WeWork. And so like Q4 was not very good. And the year this year also did not start off very good. It was slow and tricky Q1. And then Corona hit, and now you're in a hot streak in June. You've been through a hot streak in June, where IPOs are back, and they've been pretty good, and we'll talk about some of those. Mm-hmm. Still, the dynamics are kind of hard, because it's been very unpredictable in the first half of the year, and there's a lot of people who have sort of prepared filing, or have filed under the radar, that have not gone to market. It's obviously been a public markets dropped significantly in March and April and have recovered. And so whether that's a steady recovery or whatnot, or if it's sort of a time window is difficult to say. So timing is definitely difficult. And there are lots of strange fundamentals around timing, given that the market is so volatile that it is. So whilst I would say, tech IPOs have been back and have been good in June. I don't think anyone feels very comfortable that this is an absolute stable situation and that it's a good window for all. I think that sort of would be my sort of take on the macro environment, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think, Arne, these people are not waiting? You think because they do some, you know, testing of the market, is there a market for people buying their shares? But the thinking might be this will take, you know, year, 18 months to normalize and they need the funds now, or the earlier investors want to get out. Like, why not wait and rather than going IPO in this volatile market?
So I guess we'll get back to it a little bit when we talk about the future IPOs. There are some that have not gone out and have actually raised in the private market instead. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the dynamic. You know, are you in a good sort of segment of the market? Then you might think that it's a good timing anyway. Mm-hmm. It could be that you need the money and it's not easily available in the private market simply because of reasons related to the company or reasons related to which investors are on board, or it could be specific investors who are looking to get to an exit for time reasons related to the funds or other reasons. So there could be a slew of reasons for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. It depends on the sector they operate in. You know, some sectors are benefiting from this lockdown. Other sectors, so they may have an incentive to do it now because they may get higher valuation. And other sectors like travel are depressed, so they have, you know, an incentive not to go IPO at this time because the whole sector is depressed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, you ready for first one?
Yeah, so we go into the section that deals with the IPOs year to date. And obviously, there has been a lot of IPOs that we will not cover here. So we'll talk about, I guess, four IPOs in tech space that are we find kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So the first one we'll talk about is Casper, Casper Sleep Inc. And Casper is a company in the D2C space that we talked about in one of the episodes last year. So that's direct to consumer. So that's essentially a supplier of some good or service directly marketing to the consumer and sort of you know going without the retail partner or you know through brick and mortar retail. So Casper is one of the well-known brands that do mattresses and was is sort of one of the leading brands in the D2C space. And they came out in, I believe it's what, 14th of February. My notes fail me here for the time being, but 14th of February, yeah. And went to market. And so that was the first one of sort of the well-known brands in the tech space, if you include D2C in tech space. And essentially, it was a disaster and it continues to be a disaster.
So they went out on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
So I just looked up our D2C episode for listeners who are interested is season one, episode 23. And this Casper, how do you justify it being a tech company? I mean, it's basic, you know, e-commerce, D2C, selling mattresses. Like,
yeah, you can discuss, you know, whether, you know, e-commerce as a category or D2C as a category is a tech company. I mean, mattresses is not tech, although I guess Casper will claim that there's lots of technology into making their mattresses good. But I think it's because, you know, distribution model is related to like internet technology and therefore sort of for traditional reasons. You know, the e-commerce from the dawn in the 90s have been sort of bundled into the tech space. I will claim, though, that Casper is clearly less of a tech company than what Amazon is, even if both of them are e-commerce companies. Amazon is a lot of other things as well.
Yeah, I think when I think of tech, it's, you know, it's fast scaling or there's some actual tech. But anyway, we can have an episode on that. What is a tech company?
Well, I guess we accepted D2C into the tech space by having an episode on it last year.
It's some tech, but it depends. D2C in what? What is the... what product they're selling. But yeah, that's, I would say, a separate discussion. But generally, you know, we cover startups. Not all startups are, you know, let's say high tech.
Yeah.
So here, why do you think it was a disaster?
Yeah, the market clearly didn't like what they saw when they saw the S1. The company used to be a unicorn. And it went out at being a half a unicorn and it dropped to a fourth of that. And it's now back up to being valued at $356 million. But the reason why the market didn't like it was that because it's a physical good, it has a lesser gross margin than more pure tech play. So the gross margin here on the product is, you know, about 50%, slightly less than 50%. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have returns. And then you have a very high customer acquisition cost. And it's not one of these things where you keep repeat buying. There's a, you know, if you buy a mattress and you're happy with it, it takes quite a long time before you buy another one. So the lifetime value turns out to be quite low. You might buy two when you buy one if you're, you know, have two people needing a mattress at the same time. But anyway, it turned out that the unit economics are just very bad. You know, there is a sliver of a profit margin on the first purchase, but it's not very much. And when you then, you know, add on, you know, the administrative cost and overhead of the company, it's just a massively loss-making company. And it doesn't seem to be a clear path to becoming more profitable. Because if you market more, your customer acquisition cost goes up and each customer is not profitable. And it's a highly competitive market and it has that gross margin. So it's just the business model itself just turned out to not look very good. And the market saw through that, even if it was sort of a brand that people were excited about before they saw this, they saw the numbers.
Yeah, you're right. And I think they wasted a lot of money. What I remember reading about them when they were not public, you know, they were trying to become they were disrupting sleep. So they went into, I don't know, many different directions trying to disrupt sleep and hired hardware engineers to develop gadgets for sleep. So they, you know, deviated from the core of selling mattresses and making that more efficient. And then it's, as you said, it's easy to copy. Now they're like, I don't know, in scores or dozens of companies selling mattresses online directly. So already there's a lot of competition.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even if you're in the US and you're listening to the radar, there are like mattress commercials all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think sort of the high level marketing was kind of interesting because they, you know, the loss of productivity in society of bad sleep is actually very high. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was branded to like welcome to the sleep economy. And, you know, there was like, there was this very like high level visionary marketing around. You know, how the sleep economy would be saved by Casper. But it was just, you know, the gap between the numbers and sort of the vision just got to be blaringly big. It wasn't quite as fluffy and bad as WeWork, mm-hmm. but clearly the market didn't buy into the, you know, the high level marketing with the numbers.
Yeah. I somehow missed that term, sleep economy. But they were good at using influencers in marketing. I think a lot of D2C companies have to do that, use influencers to build the brand and awareness. So Casper was one of the first ones to use it effectively.
Yeah, and it turns out that it's people quite like the product generally. So it's not that the mattress is bad or anything. It's just that, you know, the market didn't seem to think that the $432 billion sleep economy could be captured by Casper in a profitable way.
So now their market cap is less than 400 million?
Today it was 356 million.
Okay. And what's their revenue?
I would have to look that up. I can't remember off the top of my head, but
less than 100 million, or I'm trying to see like how is the market valuing what multiple of revenue at this?
No. They've had $462 million in this last 12 months, but they're also losing 100 million for those. You know, same 12 months, 109.
Wow. So it's valued less than the revenue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember we had this debate before, like I look at more multiple of earnings, which, you know, a lot of times you don't know, but you look at as a VC multiple of revenue when you think of valuation.
Yeah, but it highly depends on the growth rate. And one of the issues with Casper is also that the growth rate is not great. Mm-hmm. And it seems like if you want to grow faster, you need, obviously when you're losing $100 million and you're marginally profitable, the only way to become profitable is to, you know, increase your scale massively. And that doesn't seem to add up when you look at the size of the overall market, the competitiveness in the market. And if you need to grow faster when you're not, you have to market more. That becomes less efficient marketing spend. So it just, you can't really see a path to profitability that is, you know, short term and easy.
Okay, shall we go to the next one?
Yeah, so now, you know, essentially the market continued to be bad in Q1. It sort of scared everyone to go in, and then Corona hit, right? And so now we're into to June, when people go, or companies go back out and try. So there's been more activity generally in June, and including there's been like three sort of semi-high profile tech IPOs in the US. And the first one is Zoom Info. And Zoom Info is kind of like a data platform or market intelligence platform for go-to-market for B2B sales and marketing teams. It's not a super high profile case or company, I would say. I mean, there are a number of companies called Zoom something. You know, the video conferencing company is the one that's well known. But this company is a company that has annual revenue of $340 million. And it's one that's doubling. It's been doubling year over year. And it's more sort of a software as a service kind of company. So with a different different gross margin picture compared to like a company that has like real products. So so this is a company that has like in the 70% range gross profit. So this was essentially a very successful IPO on NASDAQ, 4th of June. You know, it priced at $34 per share, and it immediately sort of went up and is now trading at $51 per share. So it's essentially a $20 billion company. So that's sort of a pretty hefty under the radar IPO.
Yeah. So let me make sure I understand their business. So they basically scrape data about people online, and they package it and sell it to companies so they can target me to sell me stuff. So basically Facebook outside of Facebook type thing.
Well, not so much you as a consumer, more about businesses as far as I can tell. So it's more about sales to businesses.
Okay, so it's, so they would look at, for example, these startups are looking for some payroll solution, and they would find an org chart and like sell that to whoever, let's say IBM is targeting startups. Is that
exactly? Yeah, and not necessarily startups, but startups is a business category, absolutely.
Yeah, one. So it's finding information about businesses and selling it to other businesses so those businesses can sell stuff to these
businesses. Exactly.
Which they have information for. I wonder how they do that. Like Facebook is easy. Everybody goes and posts there. How do these guys do it?
Yeah. And I have to correct myself. I said it was $34. So the IPO price was $21 per share. It popped to $34 per share at the day of the IPO, or the first day of trading, and it's now at 51. So they raised about $1 billion. They were priced at the IPO price of about 8, but they're now at 20.
Wow.
But they're not profitable, but they're also not, they're growing fast and they're not highly unprofitable. But if you look at the metrics, their price sales is at 58, which seems to be very frothy to me.
Yeah, well, we'll see. A lot of times, you know, it's the sometimes these companies grow into the valuation, which seem high at the beginning. Sometimes they don't, so it's hard to say.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's always easier when you grow fast, right?
Yeah.
And you have a high gross margin. So then you know, you get a, you definitely get a premium for that. Mm-hmm. This premium seems very high, but it's also not a question that this is a, you know, high performance company.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we go to the next one?
Yeah. So next one is Vroom. And you can then say, well, what is that technology about that? It's essentially a marketplace for used cars. Yeah. But once again, marketplaces are part of the e-commerce segment and generally viewed as part of the tech ecosystem. And to some extent, you can say that it's more so than a D2C, simply because they operate the marketplace using technology. They don't actually own the goods on that marketplace.
So how is it, do you know, how are they different than eBay? Or like, eBay at some point was the biggest sellers of cars or used cars.
Yeah, but eBay, you can think of like in the early day of marketplaces, the classified one was Craigslist, and then you had like more the auction place was eBay, right? And it had, you know, all the verticals in the world, and to some extent it still does. But what you've seen in marketplaces is that, you know, there's become more and more specialized vertical marketplaces for any category. And cars is obviously, used cars is obviously a very large one. I haven't done a deep dive on Vroom relative to others. My understanding is that there are multiple used car marketplaces that only do cars and vehicles. So this is one of those. But clearly compared to eBay, it's differentiated in the sense that it's specialized around cars.
Okay. Are they profitable?
They are not profitable. Once again, so so if you look at their total revenue, last 12 months was 1.3 billion. Mm-hmm. But their gross profit was 64 million and they lost about $156 million. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how they account for that, because, you know, normally marketplaces should account only for the take rate, i.e. the fees they get for a transaction. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that is a lot if it's take rate, the 1.3 billion. And it seems to be very low margin, because that's, 5%. The gross profit is 5% of their revenue. So I don't know if their accounting practices is so that the goods are accounted for as revenue. View it that way, the way they account for it, their gross margin is very small and they're losing a lot of money compared to what their gross profit is. Yeah. So it seems a bit puzzling that, this was June and IPO was quite successful. And it's actually been trading well as well. They IPO'd at a share price of $22 and raising $500 million. Ending up with a market cap of $2.5 billion. And now they're trading at $22 per share and a $6 billion market cap. So, you know, not, so that's 2.5x from their IPO price.
So currently they're trading at 4x revenue.
Yes. But that is a very, very, very low margin revenue, which is very different than, you know, a typical software as a service company or something, which is typically the ones I look at multiples of revenue of.
Yeah. you think it's possible they may be buying the cars themselves and then reselling them? That would increase the revenue.
Yeah, or they do some sort of escrow at the transaction. So when the transaction is, say, they're a middleman, they don't necessarily buy them beforehand, but they sort of are part of the transaction scheme to transfer the transaction flow to transfer the ownership of the car. I can't really see how they would have this profile of gross profit otherwise.
I think this could be my summer project, you know, dig deeper into them, and it may be an opportunity to short.
If this was you know, one of those shows where we did the full S1, we obviously would have to look into this. This is but like for like an overview of what's going on. Anyway, the company is growing like 30% year over year, so it's not like a stellar growth story as well. So I must say, with just like having spent a little bit of time looking at it, I'm very puzzled why this company is so highly valued.
Yeah, that's, I'm assigning myself summer homework, study room. And if I find something that's insightful, we can share it when we come back.
Yep.
Okay, next one.
Yeah. So the next one is called Agora Inc., which is a Chinese company, but it... it floated on NASDAQ, raising about $350 million. And it's essentially a company that supplies APIs to integrate voice and video into apps. So I don't know, there's another company called Twilio that sort of supplies like messaging and voice to, you know, build those capabilities into different apps. Mm-hmm. And this is a very similar type of company, although they specialize more possibly about video, but the voice capabilities are kind of like Twilio-like, I would say.
Twilio also, they started with just SMS.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, Twilio has obviously evolved, but it's about building communication capabilities easily into applications by using APIs. And, you know, now it's, you know, voicemail and voice SMS and a number of things, right?
It might be because of Agora. I still read a physical paper. So I see full page Twilio ads now for video integration. They call it, I think, customer engagement platform. So I'm seeing more ads from Twilio in Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
How do you know how well adopted they are in the US?
I don't know the details, but a substantial part of the revenues are in the US.
Okay. And what's their like numbers, revenue to market cap, multiple?
Yeah, so they're, according to the S1, their run rate of revenue is $142 million. They're also growing fast. They're not quite doubling or anything like that, but they're growing quite fast. They were in a situation where they IPO'd at a share price of 20, their pop for the first day was 147%. And currently, let me see, they're currently trading at, $48. So that's like almost 2.5 times. Yeah, they're actually not very far from the end of the first day trading. So like 1.5x up on their IPO price, more or less. But this is the IPO was on 25th of June, so that's less than a week ago.
Yeah.
And their price sales based on that run rate is 31.
Wow.
Once again, these three US IPOs sort of came on strong in June. And actually, the Agora one, we talked about it in earlier episodes of the podcast about this thing about direct listing instead of IPO. and sort of the venture capitalist view on the direct listing is that it's a fairer setting of price, because what happens in an IPO is that bankers set the range, and they essentially try to set the range so that, you know, their institutional investor friends get a good deal and a big pop on the first day, and hence make very quick money, you know, out of the blocks. And that's essentially giving away value from the existing shareholders. And that's why the direct listing alternative is sort of popular amongst VCs these days when it's possible. And Bill Gurley of Benchmark is the big proponent of that. And so the Agora case once again kicked off a big storm on Twitter and so forth amongst you know, VCs, and headed by Bill Gurley, that who else in the financial industry would get a bonus if you missed by more than 50% on your estimate of a value, which is a fair point, right? You know, in these cases, I mean, the pop has been more than 50% in all these three cases, and up to 147%. And it's clearly, you know, priced below what the market is valuing it at. So I think there's actually, these are, I also understand that it's a hard time to price anything. It's a very volatile market. But nevertheless, I think this is absolutely a fair point when you look at these examples.
Yeah, I think the whole IPO is a racket, but that's, you can't really avoid it. I mean, you can avoid it with direct listing, but then you don't raise new money.
Yeah, but I think if you've met investment bankers and talked to them regularly, right, there's something about who they serve that's just wrong, because the companies and existing shareholders pay for their services, but their loyalty is clearly to the buyers.
Yeah.
Because they buy repeatedly from the same people. So there's something about the model of investment banking that is just frankly rotten.
Yeah. Didn't Google do like auction for their IPO?
Yeah.
Do you remember how that works? I forget.
No, I don't remember. It was like pre-direct listing. So it was like, it was something that looked a little bit like a direct listing, but it did raise some money. And I don't understand. I can't remember the exact, you know, dynamics of that.
Okay. Second homework assignment, how auction works in IPO. Okay.
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah, so I thought we'd throw in a Nordic IPO here as well, a company called Pexip, which most people in the US have not heard about. But they listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange, so it's a Norwegian company. It's a company that's been doing well for a number of years, and I think they were scheduled to IPO anyway. I think they pushed it forward a little bit. And the reason for that was essentially what they do is essentially video conferencing software and services. So like SaaS in video conferencing. They're not like an over-the-top model, quite like Zoom or Teams or something like that. They are a very sort of enterprise-grade type of company where you want to make sure that you like can get everyone in a large enterprise integrated in the same directory and get to the same conference regardless of what client they're on, or if they're in a meeting room with a Cisco or a Polycom or whatever endpoints are there. It should be, you know, the conferencing should just work, and you should be able to connect with any client, essentially, is kind of what their software service does. And so because of COVID-19, obviously, the market needed that sort of solution. So their growth accelerated somewhat, and mostly sort of more sales to their existing customer base. And so they also then IPO'd on the 14th of May during the corona situation. Probably not many companies IPO'd just at that time. They raised $100 million. They're a profitable company. Their shares were priced at 63 NOK, so like $6.5 or something like that. And it's also popped 53% on the first day. they went to a Mac. So that was a company that was then in US sense, it's a small company for IPO, $650 million market cap at the IPO. But in the first week of trading, they went beyond $1 billion, which is a big IPO for the Nordic market.
Yeah.
And they're currently trading just below the $1 billion market as the market cap. And while it's a profitable company that's growing, their price sales is 15. So it's actually conservatively priced, I would say, compared to some of the US IPOs.
Yeah. And it's mainly used in the Nordics or US also?
No, it's a global company. Their customers are all over the place. So they had a graph for where the customers were. So I can't remember the exact distribution, but one second, I'll find it here. It's a global company. It's kind of a story like the video conferencing market is actually a market where. So EMEA accounts for 31 of the 57 millions in ARR, America's 20, and APAC 6. So they're sort of reasonably balanced about around EMEA and Americas.
Mm. So EMEA stands for Europe, Middle East, and Africa, for people who don't know.
Yeah.
But conceptually, it sounds like a good idea. I don't know how long-term sustainability it has. They may become these dominant interoperable thing among different clients. So it's possible.
Yeah, I guess the question is this a market where interoperability happens by itself? Or is there a need for interoperability? That's one question. Or the other question is one solution going to be so dominant that all the other solutions have to interact with it, whether that's Zoom or Teams or something like that.
Have you used the service?
Absolutely. A lot of enterprise customers I know use this.
Okay. So how does it work? So if I'm, scheduling a video call, I put a link in the calendar for Zoom or Google Meet or whatever, and I send you the link and you get on the link. So how
exactly
in this case, what would I would send a Pexip link or how does it
exactly
work?
There's a link and there's a directory, right? Mm-hmm. Directory knows what sort of client you're on. And also if you book a meeting room, then there's a link for the meeting room that, the conference equipment automatically links to the work.
So instead of a Zoom link, I would send a Pexip link.
Yeah.
But most people who don't have Zoom can just dial in from the browser. They don't have to download the app.
But if you have four people in a meeting room and they want to connect on whatever thing they have in that room, a lot of those equipments don't connect with Zoom, for example.
So it's mainly for, let's say, the company with a conference room, which has Cisco or whatever equipment, other people can dial into that room and they don't have they don't have to download the client.
Yeah, that's part of it. It supports, there's a video conferencing protocol called SIP, which is reasonably well used by a number of vendors, but they all have their own sort of version of it. But it also deals with sort of enterprise issues where you want to make sure the security is high enough, mm-hmm. and you might have firewall and network infrastructure, and then make sure it tunnels all of that so you can get on to whatever client and get through the network to you. So it deals with all those sorts of things as well.
SIP stands for Session Initiation Protocol. I remember from my network days. I'm glad I still remember.
Yeah, and it came after H323.
Oh, yeah, yes. Good. Going back in time.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, there are things that can be done simple, and then there are situations where you need to have like the bulletproof system to sort out all these things, right? And that's where they fit in. So a small sidetrack is essentially that there's a large ecosystem with multiple startups in sort of the video conferencing space in Norway, simply because back in the day, there was a company called Tandberg that was bought by Cisco and became the business unit of Cisco making video conferencing equipment. Mm-hmm. And out of that, when a big company buys a small company, lots of good people leave and build their own startups. And this is one of them. There's probably 20 of them around here. But this is the biggest. There was another one that was bought by Cisco a few years ago. But there are multiple of them.
Yeah, I mean, Zoom is a result of that. The founders came from WebEx. Cisco bought WebEx and they started Zoom. Yeah.
Sorry, I lost the connection for a second.
I said Zoom is a result of that, where the founders came from WebEx.
Exactly.
They started,
which was a startup that was bought by Cisco as well.
Yeah. Okay, so let me summarize. We covered Casper, which we think is overvalued, or the IPO was disaster. Zoom Info. IPO was very successful, but we don't know, remains to be seen how justified the value is. Vroom IPO was successful, but at least I think there's something, and I think Arne thinks the same. It doesn't make sense to us, the valuation. And Agora, the valuation was way underpriced, so they're more than doubled in like 3 days of trading, but the business itself of video APIs makes sense. Pexip, also, it's the business of interoperability with older equipment makes sense, and IPO was successful. I just noticed all the five companies we covered, none of them is a Silicon Valley company. The Casper is New York, Zoom Info is Washington State, Vroom is New York, Agora is China, Pexip is Oslo.
Wow.
So it's the first half of 2020 is non-Silicon Valley IPO.
Yeah.
Okay, shall we quickly cover the next section, what we are looking forward to?
Yeah, I guess we had a small section on one coming up very soon as well.
Yeah, but
we can say that we look forward to it. Yeah. we can pretend we look forward to it. Yeah.
So what's the one coming up?
Yeah, so a company called Lemonade has filed for an IPO. Mm-hmm. And Lemonade is sort of a direct consumer insurance play. Mm-hmm. And they operate in what's it called? Renters and what's the exact term for it again? Renters and home insurance policies.
Okay.
It's a tech-enabled insurance company, so to speak. One of the other interesting features of it is that it has a very, it was built on sort of a behavioral economics type of idea. Mm-hmm. where essentially the profit of the company is based on a flat management fee. And sort of the risk premium goes into a pool where you pool with other people that say, well, if this pool of insurance is profitable, that profit goes to a charity. So essentially say, well, okay, I feel strongly about what I call Doctors Without Borders or whatever they're called.
MSF.
I pool with other people who feel strongly about this. And if our insurance pool is profitable, then 40% of that profit goes to them. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of that is that it makes people responsible. So one thing is that you think that people who are very frivolous would not buy insurance. They wouldn't care about this. So they would not be attracted to the value proposition. So you can take out some risk by essentially self-selection, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that you feel responsibility because you want to do a good deed. And therefore, you look after your stuff and you will have less claims. And hence, this should be a good model. So there's kind of an interesting element to that. And the other element is that, you know, they've built this tech stack to make it fast and self-service and chatbots and things that should, you know, make customers love them and yet be very efficient. So there's sort of kind of some interesting angles to this particular company. And it has this friendly, playful name, Lemonade.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. It's a different business model and different marketing model. I don't know if they are doing it, but a lot of the newer insurance companies, they are mainly, you know, in any insurance pool, you have high risk people, low risk people, etc. But the newer companies are using behavioral economics or AI to only insure people who are less risky so they make more money. So I don't know if they're doing it, but that's generally a new breed of insurance company.
So where should the frivolous, badly behaved and irresponsible people go now?
They have to pay higher premium. I mean, insurance doesn't work if, you know, it's basically everybody pays. So the people who get into some unfortunate thing gets compensated. But if you only have the good ones, then the premiums for the bad ones will rise because less people would be willing to insure them. And the insurance companies will make more money because they don't, the risk is less. So we'll see. I forget the name, but you know, there are health insurance companies now. If you run X number of miles per 10 minutes, then you can get a better rate. Or life insurance companies, if you take some tests, then you get a better rate. If you agree to wear like a Fitbit type device, then you get a better rate. So they're trying, finding ways to segment the market and lower their risk. But we'll see.
In a way that they don't breach privacy issues by asking questions.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, in terms of they've filed the S1, it's available. They're even into the sort of locking down the pricing range. Mm-hmm. And if it prices in the middle of the range, the valuation will be $1.1 billion and they will raise $270 million. That's sort of the outlook in the middle of the price range for the IPO. And so clearly this is certainly not what was expected a little while back. And so the company must not have performed according to plan because mm-hmm. this is 42% down from the last private round. And the last private round was backed by SoftBank. So that's our favorite punching bag. So either the company has not performed or SoftBank has been delusional before. And I guess that's, you know, when we talked about why do people go to market now? Well, it's clearly because there are some of them have owners that need to see liquidity now. Mm-hmm. And SoftBank seems to be one of them.
Okay.
All right.
I will also look into them over summer. What you describe sounds interesting, using behavioral economics and taking a flat management fee rather than the traditional model. But you know, in traditional insurance, the money most insurance companies make is from the float. Basically, let's say the aggregate pool of monthly premium is, you know, 100 million, then they invest that money into different things, and that's how they make most of the money. But here, it seems like they're doing something different. So I've added that to my summer homework.
Yep, cool.
Anything else on coming soon IPO, or now we can move to the looking forward ones?
Yeah, no. And now we have a list of candidates that are maybes, I would guess. And some of these are big names, and maybe we should try to do them somewhat quickly. But because some of these have been sort of on the verge of doing it, but now who knows?
Okay,
so I'll go with the first one, and that's Robinhood. So Robinhood is the consumer trading app for shares and other financial instruments. Mm-hmm. They were looking to go to market this year, and they've actually just raised a large private round. Mm-hmm. And so that means either they're postponing the IPO or they're going for a direct listing. I think they're, you know, my guess would be that they're doing a direct listing because they have an audience that can trade in the share. So I think they're lining up for a direct listing in H2, but that's just a guess. Mm. At the same time, it's also a company that's been through issues. Mm-hmm. They've had huge traffic or trading increase during Corona. But they've gone down with glitches a number of times. Mm-hmm. And they've also had a suicide of a trader that got to take way too much risk on the platform. And when he lost $700,000 or something like that, he killed himself. Yeah. So it's definitely a company with lots of action. Mm-hmm. And who knows what will happen to them coming out now.
Yeah. So I'll say a couple of things on them. Their user experience is really good. They have already changed the industry of retail investing because of Robinhood. All the brokerage houses are charging zero commission now. So they were the first ones to charge zero commissions, and now Fidelity, E-Trade, Charles Schwab, everybody's zero commission. And a lot of you may have read in the media the Hertz people are buying stocks and it went like 5x. That was mainly 26% or a big number were Robinhood customers who basically saw the opportunity to make quick money, which, you know, I would say not prudent, but when a lot of people do something stupid, you can make money if you get out in time in investing. Then the other controversy was how they were routing the trades. If you put a market order, you know, they weren't charging the consumers, but they get paid from which route, where they route the trade. And the consumers were not always getting the best trade because it was routed to whoever would make more money from high frequency trading. But overall, I think it has done a lot to educate retail investors, making the user experience better. But like I've spoken with a few people who use it, they love it, but they don't know people. Nobody reads these days. So there's no charge for trading or there's no minimum. But if you want to take the money out, you have to pay them $75. So as long as you keep money there, you don't pay anything, but there's an exit fee. So which, you know, for them, it makes sense, but for consumers, it's not good. Shall we move to the next one?
Yeah, so the big one that I don't think is going to happen this year, but that's Airbnb, huge brand. Loved company by many, obviously hit super hard by the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Simply because demand is just shot through the floor. So Airbnb actually had an opportunity. They were actually thinking of IPOing in late 2018. decided to take more private money and build it further. They were actually profitable at the time, have grown but become unprofitable, and have now really contracted massively. That promised investors to go public in 2019. Their option plans for the employees have run out because they had a final date in 2019. Mm-hmm. Have had to make big layoffs, actually.
Yeah.
Have raised debt in the market, and is just trying to find a way to come through this very, very difficult situation that they haven't actually brought up on themselves. I think the reputation is intact of the company. Mm-hmm. They have been very thoughtful about what they've been doing and tried to be very responsible, but it's clearly very difficult, and it's very hard to see whether there will be an opening up. They were on the list of IPOs for 2020. I don't think it will happen in 2020, but it will be very interesting to follow.
Yeah, you're right. They just raised a lot of money. And I think, what's the PE firm in the Valley? Silver Lake was one of the investors.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's travel related. So, but there is some recovery in people are traveling locally by car. They're not flying, but we'll see when they go public. But I agree with Arne, 2020 seems less likely. Okay, next.
Then we'll go to Snowflake. Snowflake is sort of a cloud database data warehouse company. So it's more like hard technology, but it means you can analyze data across cloud providers such as Azure and AWS. Mm-hmm. This is an IPO I think is going to go ahead. And I think it's one that the market is looking ahead to and liking. They're a run rate of $400 million. Targeted for a $20 billion IPO. Seems to be a very solid company, and there's a Nordic connection in that the CMO is a Swede called Denise Pearson. So, yeah, doing something right, hiring Nordic people. This is going to be a success.
You found the right KPI for IPO success, Arne.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, what's next?
Yeah, another interesting one, a very high profile but under the radar company in some ways, Palantir, a company that is very controversial in some circles. It's a data analytics company, and they serve many industries, but they are very heavily involved in sort of surveillance from intelligence services, police services, and that sort of thing. So they have a bad reputation for that surveillance and the privacy things. It's a company where Peter Thiel is the chairman. He's a controversial person who's also connected to the Trump administration, and by many of these are seen as the evil empire, including Palo Alto, where they've bought too many buildings. Mm-hmm. So there's been rumors for years and years they're going to IPO. Mm-hmm. And the last rumor is that they will do it in the second half of the year, and the rumor is that they need to do it now while Trump is in office, because when that changes, assuming it changes after the presidential election, nobody will deal with them anymore. So that's the conspiracy theory around them. Anyway, it's a reasonably big company. It'll be interesting to see what happens and if they're actually coming out.
Yeah, but I would say I think that's misguided. If there's a new administration, nobody will deal with them. I mean, they work with the Department of Defense, intelligence services. So all that doesn't go away. These services are needed. Regardless whoever is the president.
But. Well, remember Pentagon had a giant contract that was being run under normal procurement rules, and AWS was set to win it. Yeah. And presidential interference directly essentially got them kicked out. Mm-hmm. And I think there's lots of bad blood in these circles about what's been going on.
But I think this is different. This is not like a contract. The stuff they do, basically nobody else can do. And, you know, like guided drone strikes, like it's very like specific thing they're involved in, which not many companies have the capability to do. And these things are not put in like a normal vendor contract. Not
necessarily desire to do either, but that's a, yeah. I think a lot of it is conspiracy theories, so to speak, but it is also an unpopular company.
Yeah. Okay. What else?
Yeah. So, it'd be interesting to see if any of the delivery companies come out. And delivery companies, I'm thinking about Postmates and DoorDash, which are primarily delivery companies for food, and Instacart, which is sort of a delivery service for groceries. Mm-hmm. All of them have sort of been, my understanding is that Postmates and DoorDash actually filed last year and were planning to come out, but delayed due to the uncertainty in the market. All of them have been rumored to be coming out, but actually both DoorDash and Instacart have recently raised large private rounds. So I think it seems like Postmates is the most likely to go. I think there is an opportunity. I don't think the normal IPO seems to be on the cards in the short term for DoorDash or Instacart, although DoorDash has SoftBank as a large owner. I think, you know, given that they've recently raised private rounds, maybe there is possibility for a direct listing, but it's hard to know what's going on here.
So a couple of things. I think Postmate does a lot more than food delivery. Like Apple delivers through them. And they do
all
kinds of delivery, not just food. DoorDash is exclusively food and alcohol now.
That's true.
There was another activity in this space. A European company, Just Eat, bought or is in the process of buying Grubhub. Which was mainly food delivery in the US.
Yeah, there's bound to be consolidation in this segment around the world. And there was also discussion that Uber Eats would take over Grubhub. But it's a space with big movement and very capital intensive.
Yeah, and there was rumor news about the rumor that Uber might be buying DoorDash, but I don't think it happened, or if it did, I didn't hear about it.
Yeah, and part of that is driven around the fact that SoftBank is a big owner or a big investor in both, and essentially they're clogging up the marketing channel by overbidding each other. And that doesn't make sense, essentially. But at the same time, the full ownership is not aligned enough that it seems to be a likely scenario.
Yeah. Any other ones?
The last one I had on this list is McAfee, which is an old and well-known cybersecurity company aimed at, I guess that product's both for enterprise and consumers, but they're also known in the consumer space. It was an independent company, then it was bought by Intel. Now it has private equity owners, and there's rumors that it will be going to public market.
Yeah, I mean, the rumors were in last year. So we'll see what happens this year. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought all of these sort of names are kind of interesting to keep an eye on. I don't think all of them will be coming out in the second half of the year, but they're all interesting to follow because they're big names.
Yeah. And they're different business models. They're doing something unique. All the names you mentioned have achieved some type of success already. So let me summarize based on audience feedback. So the companies we are looking forward to going public, we don't know if they will this year, but at some point they will, are Robinhood, Airbnb, Snowflake, Palantir, Postmates, DoorDash, Instacart, and McAfee. Yeah.
Good.
Any final words, Arne, before we talk to our listeners on August 20th?
Famous last words, wishing everyone a great summer.
Yes, I wish everybody a great summer as well. Hopefully, the situation in the world is better and people are following guidance of CDC or WHO on flattening the curve and are being more cautious and take the time to enjoy life as much as you can and learn new things.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing the results of your homework, Chandler.
Yes.
As a good as a good European, I'll take time off.
Yeah, drink a lot of beer for both of us.
All right.
Okay. See you, everybody. Have a good summer.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.